The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
John Seabrook writes a lot about music for The New Yorker. And I know that his taste runs to the Stones and James Brown and the Beatles, middle-aged guy kind of stuff. But in the last few years, he started writing about contemporary pop music, profiling the producers and artists who dominate the top 10 charts. This fall, he published a book called The Song Machine about the pop industry. But truthfully, John wouldn't have even listened to pop music if it weren't for his son, Harry.
I started playing myself when Harry was born because I thought that it would be a great thing to have music around the house. My mother played the piano around the house. I wanted to pass along the gift of loving a song. Yeah, I guess I kind of also wanted to educate him a little bit in what I felt was sort of a classical pop music education. You know, the Beatles, the Stones, Bob Dylan, Neil Young. But he loved the songs, I think. They sank in. You feel like they kind of embedded themselves somehow in you?
Now that you mention it, one or two songs you successfully transmitted. The one Bob Dylan song?
Knock on Heaven's Door?
No. Love Mine is Zero. No limit.
Oh, Love Mine is Zero.
That one.
You picked up on
right.
That one. The imagery in that song is really powerful. In the dime stores and bus stations, people talk of situations. Read books.
Repeat quotations. Draw conclusions on the wall. Okay, I know.
There we go. Draw conclusions on the wall. That's a cool image.
Right. I remember seizing control of the front seat in fifth grade. I was allowed to ride in at once.
You got big enough.
And mom declared that it would be okay one time, and then it was impossible to uproot me from the front seat. So once I sort of had established my empire in the driver's seat.
Empire of the front seat.
Right. Then I started colonizing the radio presets, and I reconfigured all of them to the top 40 channels instead of NPR. 92.3, Z100, 103.5, all these ones that I would sort of dig around, scan until I found pop stations.
Wherever you go, you hear these songs. If it's a high school basketball game and the band plays them at halftime, or if it's the Super Bowl and Katy Perry is singing them, these songs have become the soundtrack to all of our lives. And very, very little is known about the songwriters and the producers who make them. That's how the book that I wrote, The Song Machine, came about, because I was fascinated by these songs and I wanted to know who made them and how they were made and what their influences were. And it became a great source of conversation for us because Harry was really into it too. You know, some guys talk about sports with their kids, but music, you know, that's something that we totally kind of saw eye to eye on and bonded over. What had changed in pop music between the time I stopped listening to it and started listening to it again was the lyric. The lyric had gotten much raunchier, much more R-rated, if not sort of borderline X-rated. That was kind of a hip-hop sort of influence, I think, coming in. You know, the 50 Cent song. Candy Shop. Okay. Wow, what's that about, do you think?
I don't know.
Licked the lollipop.
I thought he was just like candy at
the
time.
He liked candy, right. Well, I was concerned that the double entendre wasn't concealed enough. And so you get a little embarrassed at first. But I was struck by the amazing sonic texture and tapestry that, you know, if you come off of the street not listening to pop music for 10 years and you listen to Right Round, which is a Dr. Luke song, the production, the sounds, the sound of the way that starts.
Yeah, I remember being very embarrassed about liking that song. And I was acutely aware that was like Kesha, and I was like, you're supposed to dislike Kesha, but I was like, this is kind of catchy.
Well, I guess most of us would be horrified and appalled by these songs. I mean, I've always liked a good song. And what I call a good song is a song that moves you, that communicates this ecstatic feeling at some point. I felt that Right Round really had something, which I understood, even if it was in a different package. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't a guitar solo. That sound is not a guitar solo. You know, I realized that this giant change had taken place. Songs used to be a melody writer and a lyric writer. The melody guy would maybe sit at the piano sketching out melodies, and the lyric guy would sort of throw out words. And that was how, you know, for many years, decades, going back to Tin Pan Alley and before, songs were made. And there had been this enormous change. And now songs were tracks that were made by producers, and then hooks that were added by these kind of, they call top line writers, that would come in and kind of improvise on the mic. And then the lyrics kind of came afterwards, and were often written by somebody else altogether.
It's kind of like the whole thing is a giant assembly line. I was already aware that they didn't, not all of them wrote their own songs, but I really didn't realize the extent to which this whole thing is a machine until Dad started writing about this. It's sort of disenchanting.
But I have found that in terms of like listening to new music and listening to good songs, that pop music has gotten kind of more interesting in a musical way, at least in a sonic way. You know, I have this love of music. I got this love of music from my mother in particular, who loved, you know, show tunes, My Fair Lady. I have often walked down this street before. And it was like the fun times. It was the times when, like, the furniture seemed to lift a little bit up off the floor, and music in the house just made everything seem happier. So I just wanted that. That for me was an important value that you kind of want to pass along to your kids.
Yeah, I maybe narcissistically think that a lot of his interest in pop stems from me.
I don't think the book would exist without you, man.
Oh.
So how about a high five?
Okay.
He didn't like that, for the record.
John and Harry Seabrook. John's book about the making of pop music is called The Song Machine.